It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Relatively concerned. You know, this is one thing I want to do. I'll try and, get my mind all straight and everything. In the last half hour, I kind of, throwing a bunch of stuff at you, but I want to, put it all together in this hour because this is what I want to talk about. Kindergarten, all right? Kindergarten literally means, in German, children's garden. So I guess they were planting children. Okay. It is a form of education for young children which serves as a transition from home to the commencement of more formal schooling. More formal schooling. You almost want to look up formal schooling. What the heck does that mean? Education and formal schooling are not even in the same ballpark. You look back a few years ago, this is just 2006, where all the governors started getting together and how many they're pledging $14 billion in early education. They're doing this, they're doing that. And, it was just amazing. Governors in Arizona, Indiana, and Massachusetts have made full-day kindergarten a top legislative priority in 2006. And many other state legislatures are considering all-day kindergarten proposals, and it goes on about all the states are and got to save the planet and we need all kinds of kindergarten. And I remember when I first started going to school, I guess it was probably 67, first grade. I was born in 61, so it was probably 67, 68, probably 67. I go to school. My first experience was public school system, government schools, 6 years old. By the time my younger sister that was born like 3-4 years younger than me, I had me a year later was my sister. Then there was like 2 years, I think it was my youngest sister. So she was three. Yeah, I was a senior in high school when she was a freshman. Okay. Then my other sister was 1 year behind me, a junior. By the time my youngest sister went to school, which is probably into the 60s, they had this new thing called kindergarten, which is German. Kindergarten, whatever, because. So they have kindergarten. Then it went to, Head Start. Then it went to preschool. Then it went to government funding. Then it went to, we can't get the kids early enough. We're putting a, we're putting a little school uniform on them as they come out of the womb. All right? Why? What do they care? Why spend more? Why? Is it babysitting? Is it, get them out of the house? Is it what? I mean, has this whole thing been to get mom out of all this taxing socially and economically engineering us? Mom's got to go to work just to pay the taxes, so you can have that, 14th car you don't need. So I'm going, okay, so we get mom out of the house. Well, then who takes care of the kids? Well, you have other people and so on doing things. Nah, it's not good enough either. No, it's illegal to have too many kids in your house. You got to get a permit. Can't have your own daycare thing. You got to, or they have to go to school. Do you have certification? Do you have testing? Do you got to, they're freaking going to the man. One way or another, the man's going to get your child's mind. Everything you needed to know, you learned in kindergarten. Remember that book? You don't take people's stuff. You don't hit them. You don't, aggress. You don't, okay, everything I need to know I learned in kindergarten. I'm good. Done. Next. No. It's more complex than that. We have to, it's first grade. We had stories a couple years ago, and this was a big deal. They cut funding on schools so much that children, you know, it's like, woohoo, we're going to school. So they go to, you get to go to Target or Kmart or Walmart or wherever, and you do the loading up, man. I got, you know, I had so many French curve protractor kind of stuff I never used, okay? I mean, because it looks cool, man. I want that one, you know? You get that, you get the compass, you get the, you know, the little tray, you get the pencils, you get the erasers, you get the paper, you get the notebook, you get the cool stuff. I want it to fold this way and do it. I mean, I remember the different organizers they had and the colors and what I got, and oh, man, ain't it cool. And then the backpacks and so on. And then they stopped and you couldn't have lockers anymore. You had to carry all your books because I don't like bad stuff's in lockers or whatever. So then you go through all this stuff. You go to school. You're a young kid, first, second grade, and a teacher would go, all right, everybody got all your good stuff? All right, come up here. Everybody put all your stuff up on the table. Then she equally divided it amongst all the students. This was going on across the country. It was like it was a I don't know, a class they took or a memo they got or something. When they did that, of course, you know, it was, they're going to redistribute the wealth. It's going to be a less, and then those that from each according to their ability, to each according to their need kind of thing. Well, little kids, man, they start crying up a storm. They're like, hey, you know, I went, yeah, mine. Mine was the danger. The concept of property rights, the concept that you're allowed to even have anything, the concept of it was yours, you use yours to go get it, even if you, you know, especially if you worked to pay for your bicycle or tricycle or did something around the house for mom or something. You know, there is somebody, the authority, the government coming in saying, nope, put it all in a pool, we're redistributing it. You want to have a lesson for kids when they're young, what government is? I have done this before. I saw it from, I don't know, I can't remember who told me back in the day. It was some L. Neil Smith article that he wrote. He's a science fiction author, a libertarian, and I got the concept from him. I'm sure you've probably heard about it or seen it on the internet, but it goes like this. You want children to understand this you know, government thing or collective or any of that stuff? Get them when they go trick-or-treating. You get them all worked up. You give them their pillowcase or bag or little jack-o'-lantern thing or whatever you're going to give them. And our kids did pillowcases, man. They were optimistic. We're going to fill this bad boy up. Go into the neighborhood, and there they go. Never worked so hard. Door to door, then they're on a mission. Trick or treat, give me. They come in, I go, oh, man, this is so good. Here, now everybody pour it all out and everything, and I go, okay, let's see. This much for me. I get the Snickers bar and this, then I go, hey. You know, yeah, this is rent, man. You know, this is this and this and that, and I need, and I'm the government, and I got, and you go through that exercise. Man, if they don't understand, they meet you pronto. They get it, man. It's amazing if you can get past 30 seconds with this. Man, squealing and yelling and protesting. Okay. Lesson learned. Holy crap. You know, here, take your freaking brain damage candy with you anyway. So the thing is that is a very good lesson that the government can't abide. They will spend trillions of dollars to make you feel guilty about being productive, guilty about having more than the others, guilty about not sharing, guilty or shameful, or it's a law, or it's something that acting in your own self-interest, being productive, is bad. If you want to see what the future of a country is going to look like, all you have to do is look at very simple things. What is rewarded and what is punished? If you reward sloth and inactivity and dependence and disability and all that, the one kid that's just like, ah, it's all good. I know it's, you know, I have four kids. If they knew that we were just going to throw everything in the one pile and equally divide it amongst them, then how hard is, you know, some of them going to work? You know, it's not the same enthusiasm. You might have the team spirit kind of thing about how many years is that going to work before they realize, hey, man, I was the one busting my butt. You know, the old Johnny didn't do anything, and I'm, you know, what up with that? If you reward productivity, then you'll get more of it. But if you're taking all the ones that are most productive and you put it in the pile and you're redistributing it to the people that aren't, they're not going to be as productive. If you punish productivity and reward sloth in a society, guess what happens, it will degrade. Standard of living will go down. People won't be as productive. Hell, they'll forget why they even were. So this is something that they must get at inception, at the first formulation of an idea. My granddaughter, my first child, is going to be probably 11 months, I think, by the end of this week. She's not even a year yet. She's already starting to form words and talk. She knows what you're saying. And she's walking, and she's doing. And I had four kids before, and, you know, and cousin, a bunch of kids. And she is probably more advanced than most on the average. And we're attributing it to a lot of love and attention, you know. But I don't know, man. We didn't give her all the vaccines and all that crap. You know, she didn't get that. You know, my son and daughter-in-law decided, nope, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. So that might have a lot to do with it. But she has a concept already of mine. Should we beat it out of her? Could we? We'll talk about it when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
The Matrix is a system, Neil. That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters. The very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
I was...
Look again. Freeze it. Sentient programs. Anyone we haven't unplugged is potentially an agent. Inside the Matrix, they are everyone and they are no one. They are guarding all the doors, they are holding all the keys, which means that sooner or later, someone is going to have to fight them.
Someone.
I won't lie to you, Neo. Every single man or woman who has stood their ground, everyone who has fought an agent has died. But where they have failed, you will succeed.
Why?
Their strength and their speed are still based in a world that is built on rules. Because of that, they will never be as strong or as fast as you can be.
What are you trying to tell me? That I can dodge bullets?
No, Neo. I'm trying to tell you that when you're ready, you won't have to.
You won't have to. This is, this whole battle is for minds. I understood this a long time ago. When is a mind lost to the collective? When is the mind lost to blind obedience to whatever? I mean, how much does it take? What societies have been successful at doing that? What have they had to do? How all-encompassing does a social structure have to be to get them to behave the way the collective wants them to? I mean, there are a lot of repressive cultures out there. You know, in America, it's just not that. You know, it's just our heritage is totally different. You know, the whole function of any kind of government was to defend the right of the individual to be whatever they wanted to be. That was the point. It starts with the concept of mine, I think. You know, I've raised four children. I have a grandchild with that perspective of having raised these guys, and you start remembering things as you're going. And you get to have more of an objective view as a grandparent. You know, it's like, oh, a little bit too much crying. Here you go. And fortunately, she hasn't been that big a deal. And we have our grandson is coming this next month. So that's going to be another dynamic. Kaylee Rose is my granddaughter's name. Beautiful kid. Very smart. Very advanced. And I can see a lot. She likes to dance. I mean, we just turn on the music, and she just, you know, hops up and down. Now she's headbanging. She sees us, you know, like doing nodding our head with the music. Oh, she's a big headbanger now at 11 months. Not even 11 months. So the one thing that I started to notice is she gets into the, yeah! time. And she gets upset. She's definitely wanting to talk. And they're just like wanting to quiet. I go, no, she's communicating. She wants something. You know, you try and, you know, teach her the word. You take the time to communicate. You start including her, taking the frustration out. She starts vocalizing a little bit better. She's able to, you know, kind of let you know what it is that she wants. Well, I'll tell you one thing she wants. She don't want you taking anything from her. That's mine. Now, they definitely get this mine thing. So what do we do? You know, you go, no, this is mine. This is your, okay, well, here, this is yours. Take your money or whatever the heck. I mean, I think most parents, you know, acquiesce to the mine chant, rant, scream, okay? It is, you take something from them, and oh, man, no, heck no. That is mine. Without even saying the word, they understand, they want it, and it fell out of their hands, it's on the floor, you took it from them, whatever, I want it back. This is that the first thing? I mean, there's, you know, food and entertainment and learning and dancing and friends and family and swimming and all kinds of stuff that keep them distracted and entertained and learning. But that I can't think of something that's more personal than the concept of mine. I think that might be, if not the one, but one of the main things that needs to be beat out of you, waterboarded out of you, changed, tried to be altered or whatever. But can it, at inception of the concept of mine, that's what this movie Inception is about. It's about, they have, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but, you know, just the basic premise is that they go into your dreams to get you to reveal secrets. You know, what's the combination? You know, where's the whatever hidden? Espionage on a corporate level, billions of dollars involved. These guys go in and, you know, they dart you, make you unconscious, put you on the machine, go into your dreams, trick you into whatever. Okay, so that's the concept. But then somebody comes up and they say, you know, early on in the movie, they go, look, you know, we need something different. There isn't a secret that we want. We want a decision to be made. We want this heir to this, you know, mega fortune to, you know, decide something. We want it to be his. It has to be his idea. You know, he's going to have the power now. He's going to inherit, and we want whatever the heck it is that they want. It's always about money. But so the idea is, can we plant an idea into somebody's mind? No, not really. Can you, you know, teach a child that that's not theirs anymore? You know, there nothing is yours. There is no concept of mine. You have to take that away. Well, when do you do that? 2 years, 3 years, 8 years old? An adult, 50, I mean, you know, third grader, I mean, you know, fifth grader, junior high school, college. When do you change that? You can implant an idea. You can show them propaganda. You can get them to watch a movie. You can do whatever. You can even get them in a dream. But a primary lower level of the concept of mine will just sweep it away. And it's going, yeah, okay, I don't like that idea. I like this idea. And I was talking to a friend, and I'm going, you know, why do people read that? Do it? And he goes, well, you do the same thing. And you're looking at the front page of some newspaper, and I can't bring, you know, government does good for all people. And, you know, I'm obviously not reading that unless I, you know, work. But he goes, well, you do the same thing. I mean, what happens? You have an article that says, you know, private sector trumps whatever, freedom wins, and what, you know, if you're kind of a socialist oriented kind of person, you're probably not going to read that. You know, you kind of isolate your thoughts. On Amazon, they had a group of, they did a test. There was a group of conservative books that they had and a group of liberal progressive books. Anyone that read one of the books in the other, that group of books didn't read a single one in the other group. They'd read a bunch of the books in that one kind of mindset. But there was only one book that both sides read a lot of, and it was had something to do with nothing. I mean, it was, I don't know, gardening or whatever it was, you know. But these philosophical perspectives on different things, they just don't read each other's book. They're already set in their mindset. But there is a base common thing that we all share. I don't know, we'd rather be left alone than not, I think. You know, we're, You know, generally at a primal level, we understand the difference between, you know, right and wrong. It's probably not a good idea to kill people unless you're just messed up in the head, you know. And so these, what is the prime directive that human beings have that they just kind of, you know, is it, do you own yourself? Can you get someone to acknowledge that? Can you get most people to acknowledge that? I put my hand on your shoulder and I say, whose life is this? What's the percentage? How many people say, it's mine? I own me. You know, I mean, can you change that? How would you change that? Can you get lower, earlier, to where you can get a baby, an infant, at 11 months old, before they're even a year, that starts to understand the concept of mine? Can you supplant that concept that things aren't theirs, including their own life? Can you do that? Are there people trying? We'll talk about it when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
What's wrong with the world, mama? People living like they ain't got no mama. I think the whole world addicted to the drama. Only attracted to things that'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism. But we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate. And to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate. And that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurting and crying. Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning. Where is the love?
Where is the love? Yeah, it's right here. We're looking for it. We're trying to find it. You know, we're trying to advocate for it. That's for damn Skippy. And I want to tell you this one story. You know, even as a young man, you know, we're all pretty much the same. We just get social skills as we get older. You know, I remember one of my first memories is when I was about 3 years old. My father was in the Air Force. We moved back to Florida where he was from. I meet my grandmother. I've told this story before. I want to make this point. I meet my grandmother and my father. I remember him introducing me and my two little sisters. They were, like, my youngest sister had just born a baby. This woman's going to take care of you. You know, she's going to watch you during the day. We're going to go to, you know, work, and, you know, mom will come by and pick you up, you know, later. She started working part time and so on. And, okay, cool, you know, whatever. And, she had some toys and stuff set out, and I had never met her before that I remembered. And I'm going, okay. It was like a week or two later when she said something about my father. You know, when your father was your age, blah, 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 you knew my dad? Nobody shared with me, you know, finished the concept that she was my father's mother. That just never, just didn't come up. You know, I just, you know, this woman is assigned to me, and I'm, all right, cool, you know. And then nobody just took the time to explain to me that a grandmother meant that it was the parent of one of your parents. And they just kind of skipped that part. But I remember, you know, it was later in life that I remembered at 3 years old that I go, okay, I thought that she was assigned by the police, the government. How sick is it that in 1964, 65, that you have enough awareness that you were able to penetrate a young person's mind through whatever medium, I'm sure it was television, that you were even aware that there was this government of power, authority kind of thing that would, in your mind, have the ability to assign you somebody to take care of you. That you would even come up with such a mental gymnastic that your grandmother was assigned to you by the government. How messed up is that? So to think that this doesn't happen, heck, I remember it, you know, I remember that day. I remember us, it's like we were on the front porch or in the front room. I remember there was a place where I used to sit and do these books. You know, she had always teaching us stuff, you know, these little fill out the blanks on stuff and counting and, you know, mazes and all this kind of stuff. I had to do a page every day before I could go play, you know, or two pages or whatever it was. She always had these books for us to do, which was a big advantage. I'm sure it was it was like homeschooling, man. We started school, man. It took a good year for me to dumb down to where everybody else caught up with me. So I'm going, okay. So I remember the television was up over there somewhere and her side. I remember this conversation and I remember wow, I mean, that was kind of cool. You're my dad's mom? I never even thought of that before. It just never came up. You know, you would think they would show pictures to me. It was just one of my first memories. Maybe they did. But I'm going, oh, okay, the government didn't assign you? And it wasn't until later, you know, a teenager or whatever, that memory popped in my head that I'm going, wow, that's pretty messed up that I would even have that thought. So when does this, I mean, that's three. So, I mean, how much earlier does it start? Well, if they were getting into my head at three, you know, what was already there before? I don't know, the concept of, I don't know, family, you know, love, you know, who's the one providing me with goodies? I mean, you know, somebody, Santa Claus. I mean, does it have to be the government? I mean, how young an age do they need to get this in there to your head? So I look at my granddaughter, and you have at 11 months, almost 11 months, 10 months and whatever, almost 11 months, she's really starting to get this concept of mine. And whether she's saying the word or not, I understand that is her bunny. That is her whatever. She understands what's hers. So I'm going, okay, is that what they have to do? And if it's not that, it's something like that. There are certain base fundamental things that just how our culture is, or certainly I think just as being human beings, that you have this concept of property, you know, of what certainly if you work for it. And in fact, how do you get a young child to behave in certain ways? You reward positive behavior. But what if you're constantly punishing positive behavior? You worked hard to get your pencils, you got your school supplies, you got some, you know, government authority taking them from you and redistributing to everybody. You know, that's got to jack you up a little bit. So these are things, I'm starting to see this. So this movie Inception was, you know, as entertaining as it was, what it really came down to, that it wasn't like the individual versus the collective. It wasn't any of the things that I normally attracted to. It was the power of an idea. How it can be life-changing. If you can remind people of that mind, that it's okay, that all of the mental gymnastics that you've had to go through, all of the justifications and rationalizations and all the stuff that you're doing to try and unlearn a truth that you've embraced from the beginning, that you get that you own yourself, that and that which is yours that you created with yourself, your liberty, your life, created property. These are like, you know, these are fundamental truths. This is major stuff that they have to undo. If you can support that concept, freedom is the answer, what's the question? In the end, freedom always wins. It just gets messy first. Freedom good, government bad, 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 bad. You know, do you own yourself? I mean, all these bumper sticker things that over the years I've used in just relaying concepts. Love-illusion. We want, you know, a very big change, but no violence. You know, we just want a love-illusion, a change, a reverting back to, you know, base principles. Ideas like this are viral. Ideas cannot be killed or stopped. Ideas have the force of will, you know, of people making decisions. And I've seen it already begin. It never really started, but it took an enormous amount of effort and wealth and money and war and, you know, indoctrination and propaganda and government schools and all of this money, all this bribery that's been done. I mean, they're doing it. You appeal to people's self-interest. You know, are you going to get, are you going to buy off everybody? Do you have enough money in the world to do that? Well, they're trying to do it in Pakistan. Now, hundreds of millions of dollars are going to go in and bribe, you know, Pakistanis to whatever for, you know, one more election cycle. I mean, it's always about one more election cycle. Then they'll put up with whatever and go hammer down on Hellfire missile drone somebody, you know, with the Reaper, Predator, whatever the heck. And then they'll, you know, just try to put the genie back in the bottle one long enough to get through one more election cycle. I, you know, that's how it works. You know, and we're going into the greatest depression. What are they going to do? I don't know. I think to the degree that they've had success in getting us to be confused, a lot of times they can't really brainwash you or waterboard you into unlearning the truth, but they can confuse you where you're trying to apply it, and it doesn't really apply. It doesn't work in this system the way it's, you know, the tax system, the laws, the propagandists, the talk shows, the media, the cable news, and it's just all counter to everything that you really understood as an infant. But it never dies. And when it's embraced, that society flourishes. How do you unlearn the truth? I don't know, they're trying, you know. So what happens when you get reminded of it? What happens when every justification they've had for ruling you all of a sudden goes away? You know, you're not having a higher standard of living. You're not getting a good education. They're taking money and sending people that you know off to die. What happens? There is a revolution between the ears that is happening, and it's just coming to recognize what we already knew. There are certain base fundamental things that make us human. And no amount of money, and no amount of time, and no amount of effort will make us unhuman.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Louis Armstrong, what a wonderful world. It always makes me feel better. And you know what? It's about me feeling better. and you too. I'm really optimistic about the future. And it's just, that's why, you know, it's Morpheus, we're not afraid. You know, in my opening music that I have, it's you know, we're not afraid. I choose not to be afraid. I choose not to live in paranoia and fear. That doesn't mean they're not there, you know, but I got good advice. It was late 80s when I first started coming to realization. There was some weird stuff happening. I mean, it was long story, but I mean, I really felt my phone was being tapped, and there was, you know, there was a lot of evidence some weird stuff was going on because I was really hammering on, you know, some people that didn't want to be hammered on, and it had to do with commerce. And the guy that went to the Arizona Department of Commerce happened to be one of the VPs from Quest, which was, you know, Ma Bell, you know, thing and so on when it broke up. And, all of a sudden, you know, some weird stuff would happen with my phone. I mean, my wife and I go to bed, and it was like clockwork. It was 15 or 20 minutes after our last words, and then it went ding-ding, and it did that every night for as long as we lived there. And it didn't matter what time it was just a certain amount of time after we stopped talking. So I'm like, what the heck is that? And I mentioned it to a friend of mine, and he goes, Ernie, if you stop being so paranoid, all these people would stop following you. And I'm like, What? I had to think about it for a second, and I go, yeah, that's a good enough reason. Because what he was saying is that, yeah, so they're fine. So what? And if you just stopped worrying about it, then you wouldn't notice them. I mean, is there anything? Are you really worried? I mean, I thought you were wanting them to. I'm going, okay, good point. And that was a good piece of advice early on in my activism. If you'd stop being so paranoid, all these people would stop following you. Does it mean they're not there? No, not really. I mean, it's just you have to train yourself. It's a decision that you make. You just don't worry about it. Yeah, so they got, you know, FBI agents listening to every blah, blah, blah. Well, they got to change out every 2 weeks because they keep converting them. Cool. You know, whatever. Is it electronically? How do they, you know, what? I don't care. I just choose not to be afraid. I made a decision early on, 20 years ago. I just don't care. I program myself not to care. And as time gets on and there is evidence of things that happen or they do or they information, you know, they got, you know, some other way than normal, you know, this kind of stuff, you know, I'm going, yeah, whatever. You know, it's almost like they want you to react. They want you to get paranoid. They want you to do. That's what, you know, I think one of my biggest assets has been the fact that I and my wife, you know, both have just, we just don't, oh, I guess we're hitting the nail on the head if they're actually doing anything. You know, when we get to know law enforcement, I have FBI agents that call me on a regular basis when stuff, you know, they not much anymore. I mean, they used to a lot during the militia days in the 90s and so on. I mean, I'm like, seriously? I mean, you guys, come on. And you know, the law enforcement here in the city of Phoenix and other Masons, I get it. Politicians, I know them. I deal with the media, I'm good. Are they checking me out, surveilling, pulling my tax records, looking at my credit cards? Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, maybe. Am I allowed not to care? Does that mean I don't have anything to hide? Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I just assume they not know I spent on whatever. Did he get a little bit too much ammunition? How many guns did he buy? You know, it sounds like he's got a reloader. Well, he's got. Did he wouldn't watch this movie. He rented this one. He did. You know, yeah. What? Last night, for the first time, it was called Invictus or whatever that about the South African rugby team and Nelson Mandela movie with Matt Damon, and my wife wanted to see it and so on. So we didn't have to be able to do it on your Dish satellite. You have to connect it up to a phone line so that you can make the request. You know, it dials up. Yes, I want. Okay, yeah, go. Comes back. It charges you, and then it comes down on the satellite, or it authorizes you can watch it or something. A little smart card. Well, I knew I had this for years. I've had the little gizmo gadget you plug it into, and it's a wireless so that it goes to your phone line that you have in some other room, and then it transmits it. And I just didn't. I don't care. I'll rent the. I don't watch that much TV anyway. So I just say, nah. You know, until I go, all right, well, we'll do it. You know, daughter-in-law was there. She wanted to watch it. So I go, okay, well, I'll go ahead and, you know, set it up. The reason I didn't, one, because I didn't really care, is that I didn't want them to know every freaking thing I ever watched. As you know, it's there's a lot of data, you know, that's done on those chips. So you do the phone line, and it was cheaper. You know, they were like, oh, you get a $5 discount if you plug this in. Really? Why? Because they want the data. They want what you've been watching. You know, and the ability for you to be able to order a movie means you got to plug in the phone line into it. By having that phone line plugged in, you get $5 a month discount because they want to track all the stuff that you're watching. So I'm going, you know, I just assume not. I mean, there's nothing I really care, so we did it and put it in. But it was just one less reason for me to get off my butt and hook up all the wires for years. So I'm just, it's not that I don't think, you know, big bad guys are out there. They are. You know, I don't care. Because the battle that they think that they're fighting for dominion and domination and passing laws and legitimizing whatever it is that they're doing is not where my battle is. My battle is for the inception of an idea that has already been there from near birth to remind people that it's there, that it's okay for you to advocate for self-ownership. It's okay. It's okay. It's not everything you need to know you learned in kindergarten anyway, okay, about how to interact with people. And we have such technology that now we can learn and ask anything that we want, anything. We don't need all of them. And the computer that I got for my son when he goes to Mexico, I showed him. I go, look, you're going to have access to the Internet. You go to Google here in English. You can do it in Spanish, whatever. You type here and hit translate English. Boom, it comes up. You know, I showed him how to the conjugation of verbs. Well, I know I took Spanish a little bit in high school a couple of years. So I go, look, you know, this is what you need to know, be able to communicate, you know, just so you, because, you know, you're going to need to. Wow, can you put that on my BlackBerry? Yes, you can. I bet you there's an app for it. You know, go look. Yep, so, you know, that's what he did. So I'm just going, the need for government is going to, they have to attack us at a fundamental base way, deep in us, to get us to think something different. If they can, they will. If they can, they are. And you see these concoctions of viruses and antibodies and bacteria, just crap that they're pumping in to infants. You know, come here and get your 67, you know, disease, little whatever the heck, no. You know, whatever. You can't possibly know the ramifications, or you do, you know, but either way, man, I'll do the God thing here, man. You know, he doesn't make no junk. I'll be all right over here. We get enough nutrition. We're good. We'll just stay over here. All right. You can do all your own little needle jabbing stuff. I'm good. So that's what, you know, I think a lot of America is trending that way. And that's what I wanted to share with you today. After seeing the movie Inception this weekend, it had an impact on me that I understood the power of an idea. The power of just a simple action, a simple truth, a simple phrase, a simple understanding in an individual or even a culture. Freedom good. Okay? You know, I own me. Okay? You own you. Okay? If I can remind people of that, we can do the love illusion. That's why I knew it was going to be so popular. We can do the love illusion and have someone like Dr. Paul explain what it really means. It's just the non-initiation of force. You know, you keep what's yours and leave what somebody else's alone. I mean, you know, these are concepts that are enormously popular. The genie's already out of the bottle. And you can change an individual and an entire country, an entire planet direction based on a base concept. And that concept of freedom has had so many enemies, and tyrants are trying to beat it out of us as individuals and as cultures and as societies because it does not serve their interests. Take the red pill. Wake up. Understand the truth. Let me tell you what the truth is. You're okay just the way you are. You're allowed to want what you want. As long as you're not bothering anybody else, you know, just feel free. It's always about social and economic engineering using, you know, threats of incarceration, threats of, heck, damnation. Somebody got a 45 to your soul. Or hold up saying, if you do, you're going to, and you're not bothering anybody. I mean, you know, what if that epiphany right there, what if that realization is that, look, and it happens. You know, they're called ex-Catholics. You know, the guilt, you know, they just get away from it. You know, so I want you to just, you know, take a deep breath and try to, I don't know, what is it, center yourself, you know, find out what the truth is, live that way. The burden will be lifted. That's all I'm trying to do. I'll talk to you tomorrow.